everybody. I'm Allie.
And I'm Jake.
And you're listening to episode 13 of Return to Sender.
Ooh.
So dumb.
Today we're talking about expectations. Communities are set up with a very specific structure that's really meant to keep things orderly and help people know what's going to happen next. But over time, those structures change, especially between different generations. But people really hate to change with them because change is a scary thing. So today we're going to talk about some of the pressures and expectations that are put on many different groups of people. And we have a couple of guest hosts today to talk with us. We have Jossie and Patrick. So why don't you guys tell us a little bit about yourselves?
Sure. So I am Jossie, also known as Jocelyn Broadwick. And I am a writer. And currently what that means in my life is that I teach at a couple local universities, developmental and introductory writing. I also do some freelance editing work and tutoring and have my own personal writing projects that I'm working on. And I'm here with my husband.
My name is Patrick. I am Jocelyn's husband. I am an administrator for the Maryland State Retirement Agency. I work in downtown Baltimore. Been there about 7 years now, ever since I graduated college. And it's basically what allows me to pay my student loans. And I
sounds like you really love it.
It is not the dream job. But,
yeah. Tell them what you studied.
I studied art history in college. So it makes sense that I would be a paper pusher, basically. And but hey, I'm good at it and I've moved up several levels. So hey, why not?
Yeah.
There you go.
Have you ever worked at a museum or looked at being a curator?
I have looked at all of those things. I even had the opportunity to, during college, give a tour to a public school through the Baltimore Museum of Art, which was great. But you basically have to get your PhD if you're going to do that. And yeah. I am not on track at this point to go that route. But
he's really great as a personal docent. Like if you want to rent him out to go around and make him tell me, you know, tell me about this piece of art and, you know, who it's by and what the
cultural
themes are.
Yes.
And, the time period.
Yeah. So we'll our podcast is now offering art history lessons
for a fee.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So Jossie and Patrick have been married for about, wait, do you like to go by Jocelyn now?
It doesn't. So you have known me my whole life. And so like you may call me Jossie.
Okay.
But like the rest of the world now knows me as Jocelyn.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. A lot of people call me Alex. Present day with the Alexandra.
Guys trying to get all professional.
Which I know. I know you as Allie.
As Allie. Yeah. And I go by Allie on the podcast. So.
Which like, why do we add the E's to things?
I don't know.
It's
cute.
When you're a kid. Yeah, that's cute. That's all it is.
Do you have one? An E to the end of your name?
Jakey.
No.
Jakey.
No.
Jakey.
Nobody ever called me Jakey.
So my family all knows me as Ricky. Short for Patrick, you know.
Yeah.
Right. So. Were you a junior?
No.
So just Ricky.
Just Ricky.
Huh. That's better than Patty, I guess.
I was called that in high school.
You were not.
Yes, I was. I had too many nicknames.
Ooh. Yep. Yeah. I'd take Ricky over Patty for sure.
Yes,
yeah.
I did.
So Jocelyn and Patrick have been married for 5 years now. And as you know from listening to the podcast, Jake and I have been married for about 11. But both of us got married as fairly young couples, which is kind of odd for millennials. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience with that, being married young and like how people reacted to it?
Sure. So to preface it, we both come, like a lot of guests on the podcast, from like very religious backgrounds. And so, for example, like where I went to college, getting an MRS degree, like no one actually said that they were there to do that. I don't think it was a conscious choice, but a lot of people like paired up in college. And so when that didn't happened for me, like I got married when I was 23, I felt like I was a little bit behind the times, you know, of just like, oh man, like this isn't gonna happen for me, which sounds like ridiculous, and I fully acknowledge that. But then right around the time we got married, I immediately entered my grad school program, which was like a, you know, a secular college, and they all thought I was crazy of like, you're 23, what are you doing? And it was like this real reversal of like, I thought I just did the thing that I was supposed to do. Like,
most of like, them were also twice your age.
It's true. And yeah, yeah. And like grad school, you know, they divorced. All told me about their first marriages and like,
yeah. yeah.
You know, and saw mine that. As that, you know, and I'm just like, no, we're going to love each other forever. And so, yeah, it was kind of a funny entrance for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, it was, marriage was always the thing you did after college uh-huh. as a good Christian man. It was just the next step. That being said, I never thought I was going to get married because I was so shy, because I was so introverted, and because I just felt to some degree unworthy of it.
Right.
I had very low self-esteem and all that growing up. But thankfully, I met the right person at the right time. Not that there's, yeah, I don't buy into the whole soulmate thing, but it's a matter of, it's got to be the right timing and the right job, and you got to want it enough to work at it. And we both did. And even though we were young, there didn't seem like any reason why we shouldn't go that route.
Yeah, I totally hear you. And I think there's two interesting things you guys said there. But first, I want to preface this with, we're not judging you if you got married late.
Oh, no. Like, yeah, not at all. I don't even advocate for like at a specific age. Like the only way I advocate for marriage is like the two people or however many, whatever, the people want to do this thing and are on the same page and are doing it. Like, that sounds like a good idea.
I meant to say that in the beginning before we brought it up, because we're two couples that got married relatively young. We're totally not judging you. In fact, we'd love to have a couple of people who got married in later years come on the podcast and talk about it. Just, this is what we're talking about today. And then the second you brought up was the advice. Being around people who are older than you or got married young and got divorced, it's really, everybody always has something to say. And I think that can go with more than just marriage. It goes with having kids, with what school you're going to. And everybody thinks the thing they did was the right thing to do, and therefore they want to bestow their wisdom upon you. And guys, that's really annoying.
Yes.
It is the most annoying.
Preach. It is not fun.
No, I do think, I think people are getting better about it. And maybe just in our circle of friends, I feel like people are getting better about it. Hopefully it's kind of across the board.
It's because we're the advice givers. Yeah. Now.
Maybe, but I do know like that's how we approach it, is very much, and you know, not that we're great at it either, but you know, just approaching it in a way of like, hey, I'm here if you want some advice. And like, sure. I can tell you if you want to know, but you know, by no means am I an expert, but you know, I have some experience, and if you want to hear about it, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to shove it down your throat either.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's like, I understand that like as a society with so many different things, we want to find like parallels and through lines and things that connect together that can apply universally. But I really do think that every relationship is unique and dependent upon like the wants and the needs of those two people. And like you said, so many people just project their own experience onto it. And it's like, it's obviously like different circumstances or different wants or like just because that happened. I think a lot of times people do it to kind of like test themselves and like judge their relationship to like the current relationship they're speaking about. And like, well, it's going to play out this way. Just kind of like assess their own life and choices and things. It's so bizarre. Like the things people will say of like, oh, well, this is just your first husband. Like, be sure to get his 401k when you get divorced, or like all sorts of like crazy, like even it's professional people too, customer service, the woman at the bank, like classmate, like all the things. Just everyone has so much to say, and it's like, I didn't ask, I just shared something that happened in my life.
The woman at the bank really did not want Jocelyn to close her bank account and merge it with mine. She thought she was ruining her life by doing that.
Wow.
She was like, you will lose everything. And I was like, I feel like
she is not a counselor.
Right.
That's not her job at all.
Oh, I mean, because I had like a huge, you know, like
savings
credit account, life at 23, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I really tanked
you
myself.
Move the whole 2.8 million over to his bank account.
Yep. Right.
Exactly.
Where's your prenup, Josh?
Exactly.
It's so funny though, because it reminds me of the way people talk about, you know, we had the episode, I think it was the Me Too movement episode. When you talked about, I'm losing my train of thought here. Oh, I lost it.
So for from the time we were kids, right? The little poem, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes the baby in the baby carriage. There's like a list of things you're supposed to do in order. And you guys kind of alluded to that. You go to college, you get married, and then you buy a house, which apparently your first expectation is to get into big, big debt from college and a house. And then, you know, you're supposed to settle down. You're supposed to have kids. You're supposed to have this steady career. And those expectations are... a lot to handle, especially when you don't fit into one of those pegs.
Right.
Yeah. And I would say we fit into the marriage, like the young marriage peg, but we haven't done any of the other things.
Right.
Like we haven't bought the house. We, at least right now, are living our lives as if we're not going to have kids, but reserve the right to change our mind in the future.
Right.
That's like my disclaimer. In case we decide that we do want to have kids later on. But, yeah, like it's just you're supposed to, exactly like you said, do all these different things. And those are the next questions that come. And I feel like we got married and then I had a lot of like culture shock about my decision of like, oh, I did something that I thought was normal, but maybe was not normal in kind of like the bigger, larger, broader world than the one that I came from. And I feel like I like intentionally pumped the brake of like, wait, what do I want for love my life if I have more choice? And this just like isn't happening to me, like what choices do I actually want? Like what agency do I want to have over what I'm doing?
Yeah. That's interesting. Like instead of this list of things happening to you, you could kind of create that list. I think that you talking about reserving the right to have kids is such an interesting one. I think that's the hardest thing for all young married couples, couples that aren't married, is the constant question. When are you having kids? Are you having more kids? Are you going to have another one? Do you want to have kids? And I just want to say, for the benefit of all people, let's stop having conversations about my uterus. Like, I am so done with it. Ask me about my career. Ask me about the last book I read or the vacation I want to go on. And if I say, I don't know if I'm going to go on vacation this summer because I might be pregnant, then feel free to ask me about having a baby. It's just, it's constant. It's like if you say you don't want kids, you're diseased.
Well, and it's like you're making a statement. I feel that a lot. Like, you know, I'm like holding a hard line and that I'm like against other women that, like, I feel like it creates, like, we're made to feel like it creates this divide, but it's like, no, I'm making a very personal choice for myself. Like, when I think about having kids, like in the pro column for me is like, wow, that's really cool that like my body could do that. Like the same reason I'd want to go like skydiving or something. It's like really cool experience in life, but that's not like a good enough reason to bring it into the world and then like raise the child for every. You know,
I've done
like
both really, of those things, really, child really, like, and skydiving.
Yeah, like raw motivation. Yeah, yeah.
So as guys, do you guys get that question? Because it is every day.
Yeah, for us, absolutely.
Yeah,
I work a lot. Yes. And we've got it tons from Uber and Lyft drivers and them telling us, demanding that we must have kids.
We've been prophesized to like have like a girl and a boy, like certain numbers of children
by the angel Gabriel,
by Lyft drivers. Have been like, this is going to happen.
Who could or could not be
the angel Gabriel.
I mean, you never know.
Yes.
That is so funny. Yeah. I mean, I've definitely gotten it a lot, but I mean, to defend these people a bit, because looking at it from the other side, I think one of the issues is most people don't like or know how to make conversation. So they just talk about what they know. And
so it's like the weather.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's the next, icebreaker. It's like, yeah, once you've talked about how nice the weather is, then it's like, oh, so you guys, you're going to have kids one day, or, you know, ever thought about doing that? It's like, so I think, you know, sometimes I think the arrogant side of people takes over after they've kind of broken the ice, because I think that's also kind of natural for people to, you know, want to be a source of knowledge. So I think they come in with this kind of like, I just want to make conversation. And then all of a sudden that's where the advice starts. It's like, I want to be the knowledge giver. I want to help out. I want to do this. And it's like, you know, I get what you're coming from, but I don't need all
so
the advice.
With you, it's kind of easy because you can say, oh, yeah, I have two daughters. And then people go, oh, I'm sorry. But with you, you have to say no. What's the like backlash, if there is any?
It's you're going to want kids. That's really what you hear right after you say, we're not sure, or not like, no, we're not planning to have kids right now. You're going to
regret it.
Yes, yeah. You're going to regret it.
Or this will inevitably happen to you. Like they have decided.
You'll change your mind. You'll change.
I know what birth control is.
Yeah.
I know how to use it. So I'm okay. But
we've been 100% successful at not getting pregnant.
Science has come a long way. We can handle it now.
So that is definitely the next. And I agree with you. I think people do just want to have a conversation, and I never think that anyone is asking the question with malicious intent.
No, not at all.
Intent to offend or enforce their values on your life necessarily, because we all kind of are solipsistic in the way that we want it. We assume everyone will look at life the way we do.
Right.
And where we want to assume that.
Yeah. But. And if people are like, if it's from a genuine place of curiosity, but the part that kind of grates on me is when you tell me how I feel about it or how I will feel or how I'm great. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know how I feel.
And I think something that a lot of people forget, I know that when we were first married, I miscarried twice. Like I had two miscarriages, and people would ask me like, when are you guys going to have kids? And I just like wanted to like break down like in the grocery store. Like I am trying to have kids. Leave me alone. Yeah. And I think a lot of times people don't realize that when they're asking a woman that, like if one in four women have regular miscarriages, that's like a really deep question. You're like you're opening Pandora's box right there. That's a hard one.
I mean, I think that would be my advice to people is like, you know, just think twice about what you're asking. It's like, you know, I'm sure I'm guilty of this, you know, just like a lot of other people.
Oh, I
like,
am too. I do. Oh, yeah. No, I ask people if they're going
to get. Yeah, it's not a problem to talk to people, and, you know, it's fine to ask some questions. But, yeah, just think a little bit before you ask the question. And, you know, at least it'll give you some perspective on what the other person might be going through. And, and the other thing is like, again, people they do this because it's a little uncomfortable to have a conversation with strangers. And most people are so open to talk to you about, you know, whatever. And so it's like, you don't have to be uncomfortable about having a conversation either.
Yeah.
And I am like, I'm not somebody that gets in the elevator and, you know, says hello or talks to the other person in the elevator.
Got to enjoy the music.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think if you remember that, just kind of like, you know, try to keep it in the back of your head. Like people are generally nice. They'll generally want to talk to you, but, you know, it's not bad to talk about that kind of stuff, but just stop and think for a second.
Well, and it's a strange balance too, because in one sense, having children is the most natural biological thing in the world, but it's also one of the most personal things in the world. And so it's such a common, like, understandable thing to want to talk to another human being about.
Right.
But it's also like, you don't know what other feelings or what past is wrapped up in that other person when they're hearing that question. So,
you know, it's probably like an increasingly personal thing.
Probably.
Like, it probably did not used to be that personal of a thing. You know what I mean? Like, I think as time goes on, I think a lot of our lives become more and more personal. You know, even though we put it all out on social media, I think so it's still a more personal experience.
Are you saying like when the infant mortality rate was super high in like, and everybody had like 12 kids because there was no birth control, it was like a less personal experience?
Yeah. I mean, you can go way back to like, you know, more tribal days where there just wasn't, you know, there wasn't cities and everything, and everybody kind of lived in the same town. It was probably a little less personal then. And then I think it went through probably a period where you didn't talk about it much at all. You know, especially you think about like colonialism, and I'm not a big history buff, but I'm sure there was times in the past where, like, you know, I know you didn't talk about sex or like anything that had to do with that.
Victorian England.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah,
there's a child. We have no idea.
Nowhere near the stork.
The stork. That must be where the stork
came
from.
But you've spent time in a lot of countries that don't like practice the same birth control or the same family structures as we do. Have you seen like any differences in those regions?
So that was actually something. So I guess to kind of put my life in context, after college, I took a couple international internships doing writing work, communications work. And so I was in all different regions. I spent some time in East Africa, in Kenya, working with young women who were part of a entrepreneurship program. And then also with young women who were in Cambodia who were either had been kind of caught up in some form of trafficking or were at like really high risk for it. And that was something I definitely took away from my travels, like coming back and like, and thinking about when we get married and like, not sure if we wanted to have kids, especially because birth control is still kind of like taboo in the communities that we came from, of like, you get married and that's the only time it's okay to have sex. And it's for the purpose of like procreation and to have children.
Right.
And it just like became, and so like birth control was always one of those, like, is that against God's will? You know, like all these like wrapped up conversations, but it was like very clear to me that if I didn't want to have a kid and I had the opportunity or means to like not have one, that like that was the choice that I was going to make. So mm-hmm. I don't know if that directly answers your question, but like yeah. not everyone has, like you're saying, not everyone has access to, you know, things that they may want or need.
Yeah.
So were you weren't married when you were in any of these countries or?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was wondering if you were getting the same kind of questions.
I was being, well, I
did
was
they ask
also
like, if you're like, are you going to get married soon?
Yeah, and I was older like over there too. I was like past the prime. So yeah. It was just like more like toppled on or whatever. So.
Right.
But it was the yeah. same deal. Like people from those, even in other cultures were kind of oh, yeah. asking the same questions.
Yeah, I was like expired. Like,
yeah. You're an old maid in those cultures. So when it comes to settling down in your guys' life and like having that steady career and the buying the house and other than kids, what other pieces of advice or information have people kind of picked at or like asked you to change where you feel like they have an like society has an expectation for you that you might not be fulfilling?
Do you want to go home or career?
Home is in our home or home is in the homes we were raised in?
Which one do you want to talk about, home or career?
Career.
Okay. Would you like to go first?
Yeah. So, I mean.
This is so organized.
I well, love yeah, it. There you go. You're so kind to each other.
For me, I always assumed that I needed to like be the provider because of, you know, the culture I grew up in the Christian church and, not that I was taught that necessarily directly by my parents, but it's so embedded in the culture that I couldn't help but come out of it feeling that was the case. And so everything had to be practical. Everything had to be like, you are the man and it's important that when you're ready to settle down, you already have your life set up for success. And I was never in my family the practical one. I was always the one who would, I was the one who got my degree in art history. and I loved it. And I have all these interests that I want to pursue, but that can't coincide with quote unquote settling down as we see it in our culture at mm-hmm. large, I feel like. Unless you love your career, I guess. But I was never the type of person who felt like I was going to love what I did as a job. And I don't. and I'm okay with that because settling down for me means being happy with how I live my life in my private time with Jocelyn and with my hobbies. My career, quote unquote career, allows me to fund my interests and my passions on the side. And that's how I've always looked at it. And so settling down for me is, I think it has some negative connotations in that some people hear it and it means your life is, it's the beginning of the end. Your life is over.
Yeah,
now.
It's like done, right? Yeah. It's got such a finality to it.
Right. But for me, it's like, no, it means comfort and stability and happiness and yeah. and routine because I love routine.
I think, but, yeah, who doesn't?
All I could think when you started was that, I don't know if you had this in your house, but like in our house we had that.
Oh my gosh, above his mom's table.
Yeah, like above the thing, like every man should be taught how to provide for a household and every woman how to manage one.
messaging? Yes. Oh my gosh. Sure.
Yeah, it's over his mother's dining room
table.
I've
seen that like in other people's houses too. Like
it's a Bible verse, I think.
I think it comes out.
I'm sure it's attributed.
It's an Old Testament. Yeah. It's a Torah. Yeah, it's a Torah
it had,
verse.
Like the book and chapter and everything underneath. But yeah,
maybe it's not. I might have to Google that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I remember growing up kind of with that kind of hanging over us a little bit. Like, you know, like he's supposed to provide. And now that we live in a society where pretty much everybody works, I'm supposed to provide as well. But then I'm also supposed to manage a household. And we really struggled with that at first because we both had stay-at-home moms, which was excellent. We had, you know, everything, our laundry done, our dishes done, our dinner made. But I never experienced how to be a working mom because I never saw somebody do that. Or even be a working woman and deal with the household. And he never saw a dad and mom have to split like the housework evenly. So we super struggled with like our house was never clean. We had stuff everywhere. I mean, it's still not clean.
Nothing's
but
changed. Yeah, just
but we struggled with what's your job versus what's my job. And it was a really big deal for us to figure out.
It was because like growing up, my dad, like when he would, you know, help like do the dishes at the end of the day or something like that, that meant something in the house because like he had just gotten home from like working all day. And, you know, my mom certainly was doing work as well. But like once we were in school, you know, she was doing some other stuff like some, you know, taking care of bills and things like that versus like taking care of kids all day, which is exhausting. But like, so when he got home and did stuff like that to help around the house, like it was a big deal. And that's not the case when you're both working.
No.
When you're both working, you know, in jobs outside the house.
Yeah.
So that
it's like, let's keep tally marks of who did the dishes more often and then fight about it later.
let's not keep a tally of that. Yeah. I don't think that's going to turn out in my favor.
Well, we went through similar, I mean, cause I think it's just like the gender roles ingrained, especially like if you have like a, you know, a traditional like husband, wife, marriage of, you know, like figuring out just between ourselves of like, it feels like it would make more sense to ask like, what do you like to do? And what are you good at? And what can, versus like, you were supposed to do this or you were supposed to do that, or you're supposed to earn this much money, or I'm supposed to do this. Like even as like people without kids, it's been something to navigate. Well, I don't like that, or I'm not good at it, or I don't, you know, like.
Right.
That is so interesting. I have never heard somebody say like about chores, what do you like to do?
I have. Some people enjoy like laundry or dishes or cooking or, you know, whatever.
Or it's
it is.
Like the lesser of the, like,
yeah,
I don't
the lesser of the two evils.
This.
No,
yeah.
That's a really interesting question. Like, what do you like to do? Which one? That's nice. I like that.
It's worked for us pretty well. So,
how did people react to you traveling when it came to a career? Like, you know, how are you going to be? Because I know I was blown away when I first found out that like Jane Goodall was like married with kids. I was like, what? But she lived in the jungle. I feel like nobody ever expressed to me that that was a possibility to do two things.
Yeah. So if we decide that we're having kids, it has always been very like evident to me that I would be the best mom that I could be as a working mom because I find so much fulfillment of that. Like, I think it would be really hard just for me personally to like default into being like the primary like childcare for our family. And so people like would talk about, since I did so much traveling and once I got married, almost as if I was being like, I felt like people like were projecting that I was being like domesticated like some sort of way, like not just domestic, but like an animal that is like now like come and like has been trained or something. And I don't know. It's just strange, especially because I don't consider myself to be a traditional career person in the sense of like I'm climbing that corporate ladder. Like I do have some of those tendencies, but I'm also like a creative person and more of a like that type of profession. And so like I always, when I introduce myself as a writer, I say like, well, what this means in my life like right now. Like I happen to be teaching and editing and writing, but it could look different in the future. So I'm not like building towards this like very like constant trajectory. Like I always imagine myself being in the realm of writing, but I'm not really sure what shape that would take. So I don't know if I'm directly answering your question, but just like this idea of going back, I guess, to like settling down or whatever, part of me finds that like really problematic because like I've never lived my life in that type of way. And I don't expect to suddenly do so now that I'm partnered or if we decide to have kids.
Mm. Yeah. I like that. And I know that I really struggled career wise when I finished my PhD last year. And as people, listeners of the podcast know, I'm a teacher, right? So like I work for a couple months, I'm off for a couple months, I'm off every holiday, I'm off on snow days. Like I teach middle school, like it's not super high level stuff. Like I can function pretty easily, like within my career. And, I love your children, if any of the parents are listening, but I don't have to think very hard about it. So like when I got my PhD, everybody's like, well, what are you going to do now? What are you going to do next? And I went through like a really big, like I don't want to call it a depression, but I was like really blue. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Is being a teacher enough? Do I have to justify it every time I say it? Like, I'm a teacher, but I also, and it was really hard for a while.
I do. I justify it to people when I'm telling them.
you I mean, justify me?
Yeah. Like, I don't mean to, but like people will be like, oh, you know, what does your wife do? And I'm like, oh, she teaches sixth grade social studies. But then I'm like, but, you know, she also just graduated. You know,
she has her doctorate.
Because
yeah.
I think people have this, you know, the stereotype about, you know, teachers that I'm like, I don't want you to just automatically think she falls into whatever you're thinking right now. Because I don't trust you.
Finger paint. I'm Miss
Frizzle.
I don't
trust what you're thinking right now. So,
yeah, that was an interesting expectation thing for me. I even thought I had expectations for myself that maybe I didn't fulfill. And that was why, like, maybe I got so like, oh, why? But I even my dad was when we left, and my dad's like my favorite person in the world. But when after I finished graduating, somebody called me a doctor, and he was like, "Eh, she's not a doctor until she's actually like teaching at a college," which I did. I know. Ouch. He just said it off the cuff, but I was like, "Wow, Dad, whatever, like back up." But I mean, you know, I adjuncted at Towson, and it was okay. I didn't love it, but you know. Like you said, you don't have to love it. You just have to do it.
Right.
But isn't that crazy that like you can't just do something for yourself, like get a doctorate and not have to do anything
right.
with it?
Maybe
like,
I just wanted to learn.
Right. Or like I felt the same with like my MFA, like, and it has allowed me to teach, but that just has been like a byproduct of it to me. Like I love writing and I wanted to advance myself in that way and get additional training and, you know, look how to put like a book together and things like that. It just, and maybe that sounds like really like impractical and crazy or something, but it's just like, no, this is just something that I like wanted for my life. And like, now I figured out what I can do with it.
Yeah.
I gotta say something about MFA just makes it sound like the coolest degree.
Master's of Fine Arts, right?
Yeah, but I just like MFA.
MMA?
I think something about the MF. Yeah, I think something about the MF just makes it sound so cool.
Yes.
And it is, so it's a terminal degree, so it's like I have a PhD, but I don't have to do it.
That's excellent.
I won. I didn't know any of this, but it's just like, this is an amazing
you
choice
did
in my
win.
Life.
So. You did awesome. Win. I will tell you now. Don't get your PhD, everybody. Everybody listening.
But you get to be called doctor. That's
yeah.
That's so awesome.
It's okay. I don't go by doctor.
Although like all the doctor, like all the PhDs I know are like, it doesn't mean anything.
No, that's
everybody else
thinks
it's so cool. And then all the people that actually have one are like, don't be fooled.
No, it is cool. It was a great learning experience. I got a lot out of it. And, you know, writing the dissertation was the most grueling thing I've ever done. And I've run a marathon and had children. So like, it is bad, but you know, it, only do it if you really want it.
So one thing I wanted to touch on before I forget was, Patrick, you said like you have this job that allows you to, it gives you the means to pursue your interests. And did you get, you said you got that job basically right after you graduated, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So I think so many people miss that. And I think we may have touched on this in other episodes of the podcast, but like people forget that like, you don't have to follow your interests like all the way in. Like you can, but you can also still pursue your interests while having a career that you may not be that passionate about.
Yeah.
And like, it's just great to do something because yeah, now you can get into other stuff. And if you ever want to go follow your, you know, your passion full on, you can do that at any point, yeah. But at least now you've set yourself up to, you know, have the means to do what you want to do.
Right.
So yeah, I want to, cause it just kind of got breezed over and
yeah,
I was like let's
that
not
too,
miss
yeah.
that because that is so important for people to hear.
And I feel like our marriage is a really like clear, like pairing of opposites in that. It took me forever of like, what do you mean you don't love what you do? Like, how do you, like, that's not, like, what do you mean you just enjoy this other stuff? Like, I didn't accept it at first because I couldn't imagine that, but it works really well for him. And, like, it just, I don't know. It's, like, a nice kind of, he's taught me a lot in that.
It is, yeah. And I think it's just such an important lesson because we knew a lot of people growing up who were like, oh, but I don't know what I want to do. And it's like, it doesn't matter what you want to do. Pick something. And if you don't like it, do something else.
Yeah.
But pick something because right now you're just continuing doing nothing.
You must be doing something.
Yeah. Pick one thing.
And the things I've always wanted to do have always been the impractical things since I was a child.
Mm.
I wanted to be an archaeologist. That's the earliest thing I remember wanting to be because Indiana Jones.
Of course.
And I wanted to be a photographer because National Geographic was all around the house.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got really into essentially the arts to some degree and also history and realized that I have these passions but don't necessarily have the means to make them a career necessarily, but that's okay with me. Like if I can just enjoy them for what they are, and I love learning. If I could be a student my whole life without all the debt that it'll cause,
yes,
I would
yes.
love it. So, yeah, I just, my free time is spent with doing photography and tons of reading. And
he has a very cool, so we live downtown, I'm just gonna plug your photography really
yeah,
quick.
He's yeah, on
wait,
it.
So
do
this
it.
Is a, like a shameless like spousal plug, but if you follow Urb Entropy, so like Urban and Entropy, urbentropy on Instagram, he takes the most like it, if you live in Baltimore, it'll be like you haven't seen Baltimore before. It's just yeah. really like cool, just the things that he finds on his way to work and a lot of like industrial stuff. And I mean, you can talk yeah. more about
and he
it,
follows but. He follows us on
yeah I followed you
Instagram, so you can find him there too.
Yes,
Baltimore's got to be a great city for that.
I love, because I've stopped a bit this spring because when it gets hotter out I don't do it as much, but I walk to and from work pretty much every day, and it's like 2.5 miles each way, and I love it. There's so many things that you see, and you can just take so many different roads that you just pull up your phone or whatever and just capture what you see. And
he calls himself the urban hiker.
Yes. Yeah,
you walk
like
2.5 miles to and from work every
yeah.
day.
Yes,
that's insane.
I love
super
it.
Super healthy.
It is. How long of a walk is that?
It's like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And it honestly, some days, especially coming home, it's just as takes just as long as taking the bus because you got to wait for traffic. You got to, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so might as well get the exercise and
yeah.
enjoy listening to my music and
yeah. save the environment while you're at it.
Exactly.
And it's a passion that you like pursue literally on your way to work.
Yeah.
True.
It's a hobby. Fun
yeah.
thing.
I can integrate all these things into like getting to work. Why not? Like it's just, it makes everything so much more enjoyable for me. So.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
I totally hear that.
Yeah. I mean, I drove across Baltimore today, 3 miles, and it took me a half hour. So it's really not
you can walk faster,
driving's
yeah.
not much better.
Right.
So, like we mentioned, all four of us are kind of from very traditional family backgrounds. And with that comes a lot of traditions and a lot of expectations and a lot of pressures. And even if you're not from a, you know, very traditional religious family background, you often get pressures from your family to continue certain things that your family always did. And I think that as you kind of age, you want to start your own family and your own traditions, and you kind of get pressured into some of these other ones. And I know like some of the things I jotted down were like, there's some religious ones. There's obviously where you're supposed to be on holidays and when. And I think that those are two really big ones for people. And even if it's a non-religious holiday, like 4th of July, like if you're supposed to be somewhere with your family and with their family at the same time, it is impossible to do. And you look like the bad guy to your in-laws. No matter what you do, it's like, you are taking my baby away. And you're like, I didn't mean it that way. I just want to go to the parade instead of the, well, no, let's correct it. I want to go to the crab feast instead of the parade.
Yes, I would definitely not choose parade over crab
yeah,
feast.
That's why I changed
insane.
It.
Your priorities.
Yeah. Come on. So, I mean, are there any, I know personally, I've seen amongst my siblings that have kids, baptism has been like a sticking point for some of them. Like the, we don't really feel the need to go through that procedure. It's, you know, it's not that they wouldn't do it. They're just like, I'm not going to have the big party and do the church thing and make sure it's the week and go through the classes and take the baby, because we don't believe that. Maybe mom and dad, you believe that, but we don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had a pretty significant religious falling out like in the 5 years that we've been married. So neither of us identifies as Christian anymore. I probably identify as agnostic. Where are you today?
Today, I know, that's the thing. most days I'd call myself agnostic, which basically means nobody can agree on the definition of a God, so it's pointless to actually even engage in debating whether one exists. Most days have been atheist recently, but some days I go Spinoza's God, like pantheist, the universe is God sort of
thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm all over the place. So, sorry to cut you off.
Only like bringing that up of like, we were really worried about disclosing that to our families, especially because I think a lot of the reason that we got married, so we got married very fast. Like we were engaged within, I think,
4 months.
Yes. And then married like 3 months after that. And it was a lot of, this is just looking back, I don't think we saw it this way at the time. Like we knew that we were really committed to each other, and like that was like the next thing that we wanted to do. We wanted to share life together. But the only option for us to do that was as married people. Like it wouldn't have been acceptable. It would have created so much like tension and friction in our lives to like try to live together or something like that. And so in reflection, when we looked back on that, like we don't regret getting married at all. It's like worked out for us, but just knowing how much like that motivated our decisions, and then like being afraid to like tell our families like what we believed religiously or like kind of where we were at with that, we were like really concerned of, is this going to cause a rift for like the reasons that you were talking about? And so like having to really intentionally set up like, hey, like this is where we're at now, and we know that you're here, and we're very familiar from with where you are because we grew up in it when we were there too, and we don't have any like bad feelings about that, and we all exist in these really loving relationships, and so how can we like maintain that where we are and like really wanting to be purposeful about that? And I think it has been easier for us not having kids and not running into situations like baptism. And I think it also has been easier because like we did the right thing and got married. So it doesn't necessarily come up with so many like barriers for us right now, but it is kind of like was a worry or a concern or like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It caused a lot of, necessary meetings with a therapist and sleepless nights and, you know, all these kinds of things. And it has gone well.
Yeah.
With our families.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's like, great.
It has gone well.
Yes.
Let's say that. Like it's, I'm proud of us for sticking to our, you know, beliefs and everything. And I'm just proud of everyone, how we've all handled it. And
Yeah. That's excellent. I think I know that we kind of had a very similar experience with kind of growing away, you know, from the faith a little bit. And I know that like, I think my parents, they don't necessarily acknowledge it, but they openly accept it. I think his parents a little bit more pretend it's not existing, just like to almost protect themselves from it. I don't know as much, like not in a negative way, just to like, we're just going to kind of whitewash this a little. But I know that in both families, they really struggle with what our kids are going to believe. Like, cause they've kind of accepted the fact that maybe, you know, as adults, we can make our own decisions, but they're really, really worried about what we're going to teach our kids. And like, I can see that in them. And I'm like, guys, like, don't worry. You taught us all these things and we turned out this way. So it's going to be cool. Like, it's all right. Like, I think there's so many kids our age, millennials, who were raised in the church going every single week. And now most millennials don't attend like a weekly service, and their kids aren't necessarily going. And I think that the generation above us is getting really psyched out with like, what are these kids going to think about God?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, having kids has certainly tied us to church more so than we would have been. I do not think we would be participating to the level we are right now. I mean, I sit on church council right now, and I
we get 30% off school tuition. Yeah, you do.
That helps. But also, I do think it's important to raise your kids with something, give them an example. And then, you know, even at this age, we let them know, like, hey, not everybody believes what you believe, and that's okay. And, you know, eventually you're going to grow up and make your own decisions. And, you know, we want you to think hard about this. You know, one of the things that's always bothered me is the whole faith like a child thing, because it's like, you know, should we just blindly believe everything we're told? No, we should not. I mean, I'm not going out on a limb by saying, no, that's a bad idea.
Santa Claus is the first example of not believing everything you're told.
So, but I think there's a ton of great values that come out of the church, and we all know that because we were all raised, you know, in it. And so I think there's lots of great things for our kids that come out of that. And that has definitely tied us to the church. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's been more of like, it's not that I really don't believe in God, but it is, I'm trying to see more. So I envision God more as coming from human beings versus being an outside force on human beings. So that's kind of the way. So like when we sit in church and we hear the sermons, I kind of try to view everything through that lens of like, he is a creation of us, but not like an artistic, like, you know, written down, you know, like story. But like truly, like everything you hear and feel is really a creation of human beings and from our souls and our hearts. And like, just,
you just got real deep.
Yeah, I think I'm sure we'll talk about that really deep in other podcasts. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of how I'm feeling now. And like you said, I mean, you know, Patrick, it changes, you know, day to day. You know, you can change kind of what you're feeling because every, you know, things come up like Easter, and you're like, how do I feel about Easter now? I'm not exactly sure anymore. But I think it's just really important to just think hard about it and not blindly believe it and not blindly reject it, but to just think about it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we are.
And I think talking it out, like between couples or between other people, is helpful. And I know, like, sometimes one of my daughters will be like, you know, the David and Goliath thing, did that really happen? And like, when it comes down to it, I go, does it really matter? Like, that's a nice story about like somebody raising up, and like, and then he goes,
except it's not a great story if you're on the other side.
He goes, poor Goliath was probably like, okay, I'm not going to fight this little kid.
So that's what I was thinking. I'm thinking Goliath probably comes out and he's probably looking and he's going, are you kidding me? Like, I'm not going to murder, you know, a 12-year-old boy that you just sent out here with a sling. At least give him some armor or something.
This is what he's telling our children, by the way. This is not whitewashed.
Send this guy out. Just like, here, this is who we're sending to fight. He's like, I'm not going to do this. Guys, I'm not. He probably took his armor off and was like, guys, I'm not fighting a 12-year-old boy. And then he gets killed. Terrible story.
Though you're making it more human. You're putting some empathy on it. You're seeing it from the other side.
Exactly. Yes. I think we all need to take that lesson. Look at it from the other perspective.
And I think it was important what you were saying too about like, we tend to like live in these false binaries of like, your children can only be moral and grow up to like be a good person, essentially, like if they're raised in the church. But that's like not true.
No,
and like data supports like that is not true.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Data supports
the opposite.
The opposite, generally speaking.
Data supports if your kids read Harry Potter, they're good people.
Which does teach a lot of the same values as, as the church.
Wait, did he die and come back?
Harry Potter.
Spoiler.
I just want to go on record and say that I dig Jesus. I think he's cool.
Yeah.
I think he has a
totally cool,
awesome
dude.
Message.
We are not anti-Jesus.
No, Jesus is pretty awesome.
Yeah,
and that should be something that people take away from this, is like, it's not one or the other. There's not just like you call it binary. There's not this binary, like, you either, it's this or that. It's like, there's this whole world out there and you can be wherever, whoever you want to be.
Yeah, I reject the dualistic thinking of just pure good and pure evil battling as forces in the universe.
It's We've just gotten really deep.
Super deep. Like
young marriage.
I think about this stuff.
We're going to figure this out tonight.
I love it.
We're going to solve this riddle.
Yeah.
Have you guys on any holidays had sticking points? Like, you had to be 8 places at once and then people get mad. Yes. So, we do that every holiday. It's like, wow.
Our first year of marriage, we did the quintuple Christmas.
Mm.
All 5, because my family is particularly complicated because my parents are divorced and remarried. And so it's not just like, it's it's not just like him, like his versus mine, but it's like his versus mine versus mine. Repeated. Mm-hmm. And then like his
brothers-in-law.
Yeah. And like his older brother, like we have a niece now. And so that's like a high priority. You know? Right. And then there's like extended families on both sides. And so we didn't know how to say no the first Christmas. And so we just said yes. And, like did five. Like they were spread out over a week, but it was just, it was too much. And so after that, we decided to draw some hard lines. And so we always do Thanksgiving in Pittsburgh with his family, because that's the holiday they prioritize. And they also, his parents will come sometime in January, like after the Christmas season. So we know we'll see them then. But
We went through the exact same thing. And like, this is going to sound real one-uppy, and I don't mean it to sound that
way.
Oh
my gosh. But yeah, don't
do
it.
We were so dumb. Like our first Christmas, we went to six different houses on Christmas
Day.
So
literally one-up.
On Christmas Day.
Literally, wow. We're better because than you by one.
No, we're just six times dumber than you. So we went basically because we've both got like grandparents on both sides too. So it was like six places, and we essentially just went around the Beltway.
How
like
did you not explode? Did you eat?
We
it
were
all
just
the
we were at like so 45 idiotic, minutes at each right. place. It was so stupid.
And that
stupid.
Was the problem. Yeah, we got like no time with anybody because it was like in and out of every place.
So
it
you
was
were
just
in all the pictures.
We were in a lot of pictures.
It was a mess.
But yeah. After that, we were like, nope, this has to change. And fortunately, you know, for us, like you guys have to go to Pittsburgh to go for Thanksgiving. You know, we still do like a couple places on each thing, but it's all in Baltimore, so you know, or around the Beltway, so it's all manageable. But yeah, we don't do like six anymore.
No, but I think one of the things that's a big struggle about it is, especially when you're a young married couple, like you're trying to like, you know each other, but you're trying to get to really know each other, and you're trying to experience those moments. And then you have to spend half of them in a car fighting about being late and the directions and where you're going next. And it's like, I didn't picture young married couple Christmas like this. I didn't picture young married couple, you know, Thanksgiving like this. Like, I kind of wanted to like have a Christmas tree in the background and dance to some Christmas music and drink some wine. And here I am, you know, on the Beltway. It's stupid.
All day on the Beltway.
Yeah. And we honestly, like, I don't know if our families have noticed this, so I might be blowing our cover, but we try to actually like leave the, well, Thanksgiving's the exception because we're up there, but like we try to reserve Christmas Day for just ourselves.
Oh, that's
so, like,
cool.
Even if we do multiple, or like at least the morning for ourselves, and we don't ever do anything. We literally, like, maybe we make cinnamon rolls or something, but just like to have it, like, because exactly what you were saying of like, I just want this to actually feel like the holiday for a second.
Yeah, it's no longer a day off if you're like stressed all day about getting to all the places. Yeah. It's not a break. And, you know, to be fair, like our parents, both sides have been really good about like, you don't have to come to everything. Like, don't worry about it. Like, you don't have to be here for all, you know, all day, every day or whatever it is for the holidays. So I think they've both been good about it.
If my kids get married, I'm going to celebrate everything on a different day.
Yeah, like every holiday will be like the weekend before.
Yeah.
You know, our parents have been great too. We haven't ever felt like actually pressured to attend everyone's get together. It's just a matter of,
I think it's been internal of like not wanting to let anyone down or hurt anyone's feelings.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Mm-hmm. How do you pick? Like, it's an impossible choice.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
And there's
agree.
A lot of nostalgia there. You know, it's like you're absolutely going to the same places you went when you were a kid and hanging out with the same people. And yeah, it feels good to go back and kind of relive those.
And millennials love nostalgia. Everyone loves nostalgia.
Yes.
Yeah, I think, but millennials do seem to have the means to love nostalgia. Yes. You know, like we can, there's a lot more money right now. So we can like buy, you know, like you can buy like now a system that has, it looks like the panel of an arcade machine. So like, you know, like with the joysticks and the buttons and everything.
Yeah.
So it looks like that, but you plug it into your TV and you can play like every arcade game from when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like $300 or something. And nice. I was like, how unbelievable is that? Like, you can relive your entire childhood of arcade games for $300. It's amazing. It's a good time to be alive.
That's a good point for going from religion to that. So how we both, Jocelyn and I both took our husband's last names. And I think it's becoming a little more popular now not to. That I have zero statistics to back that up, but I thought that that was kind of an interesting thing that we could talk about, because I, on the website and when I, you know, published the dissertation, or at least had it printed, not published, it says Alexandra Bain on it. Because I feel like that's mine. Like, this is really, really mine. Whereas, like, our marriage and our kids are, like, jointly ours. And I think that if I had gotten married older, I may not have changed my last name. I definitely think that.
a lot of head nodding going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of head nodding.
Do you think the same thing? I don't know.
Yeah. So I have never liked my last name, and I don't mean that like as like an offense to my family in any way, but I was never, so my maiden name is Post, and I was never particularly attached to that. Like, maybe it has something to do with like my parents like splitting up or something, and like weird feelings about that. And but I was like, I honestly just didn't like Post. It just, it didn't do anything for me. And so like I was
I would just have no idea like what your ethnicity like background would be with the last name Post.
Jassy,
like,
Post.
I got nothing on there.
Like, right, like, oh, like really
English
white,
or Irish. Like, or, yeah, yeah, like, really nothing.
White. Norwegian.
We were,
but yeah,
we were very, oh, very good pair in high school. Jassy Post and Allie Bain.
I know.
Like, these are great names.
Exactly. Yes. And so like I was really ready to like take on any new name, and so like it wasn't a question for me with Broadwick, and I liked the idea of being connected together. But then I think I've also, like, I don't really know, like Broadwick is really great for like search engine optimization, because I am literally the only one. When
yeah,
I Google
nice.
Myself, they ask me if I mean Jocelyn Broderick, because I am literally the only one. I'm not even like the most, you know, because it's like I don't even think that's a person. And so it's like really great in that sense, but it just, it's, and again, it's just like the sound of the name. It just doesn't feel like me or who I am. And part of the problem is, this has actually been a hot topic of our marriage, yep, of like, I actually have like an alternate, this is probably, this is the part where maybe I sound crazy, but like an alternate last name where like, I have a name that I would name myself, and I've like thought about it for 5 years. And am I going to legally like for real change my last name to this last name?
Yeah.
And like the thing that feels like me. But then I think right now I'm deciding, at least in this moment, not to do that, because I feel like I've created all sorts of like false expectations of like, then I like, I will be this identity or person that I've always wanted to be. And it's all like, it, like name feels so important to identity. Yeah. It, like it is yeah. laughable and things. And so I don't know. It's like, I've really struggled with like the whole name thing. If I could just go by my first name, like, I would.
Yeah. You
like
just gotta Prince, get super famous.
Madonna.
Yes. Then you can be a yeah.
Beyonce.
If you write some really good books, right, then you right. can be a one-namer. On it, yeah. Yeah.
No, this has been a big conversation for us. And one of the few things that we didn't fully mesh on, we tend to agree on most things. And she actually came to me with the, like, how would you feel about changing your name?
I tried to get him on it. Like, what if we do this together?
And there were like times when I was just like, you know, that sounds really nice, creating our own identity for ourselves as a unit, as a couple. And I like what she came up with. And I like really thought about it for like a few, we would keep talking about it every once in a while, but eventually I've always loved my name.
Yeah.
And like, I loved how it sounded. I loved what it looks like on paper. It has always felt very much like me. And I just can't really give that up. And I finally had to admit that to her, even though I know it would disappoint her, but she understood. And, you know, she knows what it's like to wish you had this name that felt like you, and I already have that, and she understands that.
Yeah.
And so she... Yeah. admitted like, oh, I can't ask you to give that up. So
yeah.
Well, you guys, and I appreciate both, that. the two women have also changed your names before, you know, like most guys don't go right. through that ever. Whereas like it's more, accepted or standard for women to do that. So for a guy, yeah. it's like, especially the way we were raised, you know, it's like that means a lot, you know, like carrying on your name. So there's a lot of pressure there.
Right, but you had two daughters, so now you got to teach them the other thing.
No, yeah.
Don't change your name.
Yeah, and I do like the idea of like us like sharing a last name and being can like it's like these people go together. Not that you need to have that like in order, you know, like that doesn't really mean anything, but it like creates a sense of like cohesion or belonging. I mean, it's also like inherently problematic and property and ownership and all of those.
Yeah.
We don't have to take a deep dive into. But mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
I do. Like, I struggle with just because I really do love the name Allie Bain. Like, I think that sounds a lot better than Allie Greenwood just because I had Allie Bain longer.
Yeah.
You know, actually.
Oh, it's getting close.
No, actually, maybe not.
No, you did. You did.
It's close. Did you intentionally pair like the Alexandra with the Greenwood?
Yeah,
to, like,
I did.
In response to that?
I think I was trying to be a grown up. So I got married when I was 20. I think I made a mention that on the podcast before. And everything I did was modeling what I thought a grown up was. So like I was making a lot of decisions that weren't my decisions. So like if I went back or did things with my brain now, and I think this is one of the really cool things about people who do get married when they're older or who do make big life decisions when they're older is you kind of know who you are. And I really didn't know who I was when I was 20. Now, I'm really glad we figured that out together. Like, we got to grow up together, which was really neat because we had to work some stuff out as a unit, and we fought through it and whatever. But I know it was a big deal for him to want me to change my name. And I was full on board. I was like, yeah, that's cool. I'll do that. But I do sign things Allie Bain very regularly. And I just like, I secretly...
Hopefully not legal documents.
Well, no.
Because
I can't. I'm not legally Allie Bain. But I also didn't move my last name to my middle name because I really like my middle name. And I refused to change that legally. So it was like it was a really weird... it's a really weird thing to... But we do know a couple who at their wedding put up 3 last names and they had everybody vote on it. On what their new last name would be for both of them. Yeah. the whole wedding ceremony.
That's really cool.
I hope you liked all 3.
Yeah.
I hope you didn't have a favorite.
Just be like, psych guys, we're picking a different one.
But isn't it like the craziest thing? Because like you can totally change like your name. Like you can just like name yourself whatever you want. And mm-hmm. like you can choose to like, you can have one name and then another. Like, I mean, it costs a couple $100 and you got to do a bunch of paperwork and it's kind of a pain. Not that I've looked into it, but like, you know, like it's just like,
you
it just.
Could, you could be Princess Consuela Banana Hammock.
Thank you, Phoebe.
Wow.
Do you remember? I don't know. Did you guys watch Friends?
I've seen, not oh every episode.
Okay.
Yes. So, Phoebe didn't want to change her name when she was getting married. So that's what she did.
Yeah, she wanted to change it to Princess Consuela Banana Hammock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but just like not when you're getting married. But like, you can just like change your name. Like it's just your, like you can do that. I just think that's like a crazy, like I think it's one of those things like we don't realize. Like I can just name myself.
Yeah, whatever you want to. Yeah.
And there's like, so a buddy of mine, and I'm not going to say his name because I'm not 100% sure that he's doing this, but based on a post that he put online, I think he is changing his name when him and his wife get married.
Because she already has a daughter.
She has a daughter.
Yeah.
And so they want to all share the same last name. And it's like, well, they all, you know, it's 2 against 1. They already have the last name. So I think he's going to now change his last name, which I thought was so cool.
That's,
I was like, what an interesting way to go about it.
Yeah. Well, your mom kept her married name for a long time. I mean, she was divorced when Jossie's mom was the librarian at our high school, and she went by Miss Post, and you were Jossie Post. I wouldn't have known your parents were divorced unless you said otherwise. So she kept her married name.
My dad was Dave Post. My stepmom was Marcy Post.
Yeah,
we all shared it at the same time.
Let's throw in your brother. Go ahead.
Yeah, and Dave, another David Post. It was all very comfortable for everyone.
So did she want to have the same name as you guys, or it was too much paperwork?
I honestly don't know.
You don't know? Yeah.
I think she also did like the alliteration, the Pam Post.
Yeah.
I think I remember her. I don't want to speak for her, but that's like also like who she had been for
a
so
long time.
Long. Yeah. And I think wanting to be attached. I don't know. Mom, what do you,
Mom,
I know you're listening. Like, right in.
Yeah.
A question, or a response, but yeah.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that there are a lot of women who get divorced and then keep their married name because either they had it so long and it became part of their identity or they had children.
Yeah.
I just think it's an interesting thing. Sure. I don't know. But Jake and I went back and forth on this podcast episode, whether I would be Allie Bain on the website or Allie Greenwood. And I was like, I don't want it to say Jake and Allie Greenwood because that's not who I am on this podcast. When I'm your wife, I'm Allie Greenwood.
Yeah, no, I identify with that.
Yeah.
Totally, I don't even remember what we ended up with.
It's Bain.
Is it Bain?
Uh-huh. Okay. I think we both went like, behind each other's back on the website and changed it a couple times.
Who knows what it is right now? But yeah.
But currently, I think it's Bane.
I think I actually changed it to Bane. I think
after I yelled at you for changing it to Greenwood.
Yeah, I think I accepted it.
Yeah. So let's talk about some stereotypes. And we already talked about men being the breadwinner and kind of that structure. And I think the opposite form of that for women is being like the old ball and chain. So like when guys are settling down, like we've all seen that like wedding cake statue where the girl is like dragging the guy like behind her. That is super offensive to me. And it makes me sad. Like, I don't want to be somebody who's like forcing you into an eternal punishment, you know, like.
Why is it so hard to believe that two people actually like love each other and want to spend their life together? Like,
I don't know. Question. Are we like, that awful?
I don't know, because people have been doing it for so long.
Like, and I understand that it's not always like was like a like an option, or it's not a fairy tale or something. Like, I don't have any like illusions about that, but it's like, man, like we're so jaded. Like, just
we crazy. Even have set up a tradition where you have a bachelor or bachelorette party so that you can enjoy your last night of quote unquote freedom.
Right.
Yeah.
And that just sets up an awful like idea for what marriage means.
Right.
And I know it's mostly people do it in jest or for fun, but it's just, it still is a weird thing to put right in front of the, what should be one of the most important choices you ever make.
Yeah.
And that's perfect. 'Cause that's so earlier, I don't know if we're going to leave it in or not, but I could not remember where I was going with a point.
Are we circling back?
Yeah, we're circling back. I wrote it down and now I can bring it back up. So when we had the Me Too episode, you talked about how there's all these kind of longstanding jokes about women that are actually very offensive, and people don't really mean them in offensive ways anymore. Not always. But yeah, sometimes yes, but not always. But it's just the jokes have been around for so long that it's just kind of humorous and people say them, and you know. And I think the same thing about marriage, and that's where I was going with that point earlier, is with marriage, it's the same thing. There's just all these long-standing jokes that people say, and it's kind of in jest, and oh, okay, yeah, so funny, you know, and just like you guys brought up, you know, like the old ball and chain, stuff like that. And yeah, it's just, you know, I don't want to be super sensitive about it, because I'm certainly not a sensitive person. But, you know, some people are going to take that pretty, they're going to take offense to that. And, you know, it's something I would hope we're going to move away from a little bit, because I do think the more that you allow that to go on, just like with, you know, insulting women, the longer you allow it to kind of linger, it can affect marriages and it can affect relationships. And it's just, you know, you do get people that start thinking, is that true? Am I really being tied down? Is this really is this it for me? Is this the end? And then it's like you get people second guessing. And it's like, why would you want to do that to somebody at what should be, you know, like the best time of their life up to that point?
It's a common trope, and it's an easy comedy like writing scenario, but it's also lazy comedy in my opinion.
Yeah.
And it's, I feel like so strongly attached to male ego and the need for like reinforcing yourself through putting others down. And everyone does that, but since men for so long dominated so much of what we see in the culture, that it's so embedded in us that we just go back to it over and over again because we know it works.
Yeah.
and I don't know, it's just, I think we have to, and I think if we can bring it to millennials, I think our generation is realizing that language matters. And I think this kind of goes back to one of the things I listened to first couple of your podcasts. You were talking about political correctness and language matters. And I don't care about political correctness, but I care about caring about other people and
right. The
language I use for them. And that should be enough.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's what is at the heart of political correctness. I think, you know, it gets morphed into something else. But I think at the heart of it is, yeah, just care about how other people are going to perceive it. Not because it's going to negatively affect you, but because it's going to hurt them.
Yeah.
So it's like you just put some thought into it and care about it because of not because of what's coming back to you, but because of what's, you know, being projected.
I know, like when he gets invited somewhere, like with some old high school friends, or like if he goes out golfing, or like with his skateboarder friends, and like if he doesn't want to go or he can't go, I get so self-conscious. Like, they're going to think I said he can't go. And I'll be like, make sure you tell them I didn't say this, because I don't want to be, especially before they all started getting married when it was just us. I was like, I don't want to be like that stereotypical wife that's like, no, you can't go hang out with your friends. A lot of times I'll be like, no, go, go. And he's like, yeah, I'm tired. I worked all day. I don't want to go. And I'm like, go, so I don't look bad. Like, and I think that's a hard, I don't know, it's a hard thing to deal with. And also with bachelorette parties, I'm really tired of wiener lollipops.
Oh my God, no more penises.
Can we get over full it? Full stop on the penis lollipops, necklaces, glowing crowns. Like, I'm done with that. That bugs me.
I've never experienced them, so I can't say.
Yeah. I mean, they literally are just lollipops. Yeah.
There's confetti. There's like, it just, it's a lot.
Yeah. And I'm fine with going out and having like a night with the girlfriends. Is like, you know, what like you said, one last night of freedom, whatever. You're going to go out with your friends when you get back from the honeymoon anyway. But sure. Like it's like, at some point, the reason I'm getting married is I don't want all these penises like in my face. And now you're forcing them on me. I don't want that.
Yeah. Well, and like that's, I think marriage is interesting because we treat it like this social force that like acts upon us when like we're the two people in the marriage and can kind of set the we can set the terms of what that means for us. And I feel like that it's so dangerous that we like let it, like the idea of the ball of and chain, or that it's like this ending of your life or some sort of like why? Like, why does it have to be that way if you choose to not have it be that way? Why can't it be like super fulfilling and exciting and like life-giving and like the exact opposite of that trope or idea? Because it's like this thing acting upon you that you don't have any like choice or control over, and it just, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
That's why I married Jocelyn, was because I saw in our future, because of her, a better chance to be the man that I want to be. So that's,
oh,
that's not a cute thing to say.
it's the exact opposite of the end of my life.
Right?
It's the beginning. It's the start of like what I want my life to be.
Not to, I mean, it always sounds like when I say like after you.
But like, that's why I wanted to get in on
samesies.
No, like a really mutual way. Like, you know, I identified that he created a stability in my life that like I hadn't had and that I really desperately needed and that I wanted, like, so in a but not in like a tied down in a name, but like a really positive, like I need this consistency, this constant, this like safety. These are not like the sexiest things about marriage, but they were really I desperately needed that in my life.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why, you know, people settle down, like, quote unquote, like,
yeah, but that's not stability. Funny. That's why people don't say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We talked about people going for the easy joke and wanting to
joke.
Make people laugh. Yeah, like, yeah. And I do think that's part of it. Is like you kind of touched on it earlier, Patrick. People really like to make other people laugh. Mm. So like going for the easy jokes, and like I listen to a lot of podcasts with comedians, and they always talk about like you can't just take the, you know, the low hanging fruit and the easy jokes. Like you got to recreate those and make them better. And you know, but we're not all professional comedians, so we grab the low hanging fruit and we take the easy jokes and the easy laugh because it feels good to make somebody laugh. Versus having
a
serious
laugh,
conversation.
Though? No, I don't want a fake laugh.
But the problem is, it's not even a fake laugh. I mean, people legitimately laugh at that stuff just because it's so ingrained in us. But it's like that versus then having a serious conversation of like, no, actually, I got married because I really, you know, love my wife and I love hanging out with her, and it's more fun than doing what I was doing before.
No, you got to change it up. You've got to go for the reverse laugh. You got to go for the, yeah, no, I got married for all the hot sex. You just go for the, see, I got the laugh. You just go for the reverse. But like, she's crazy. That's what you got to start doing.
Jake, you're saying something really important of like, it's so like,
not me though.
That's right. I was saying something important and you ruined it.
You have said many important things.
I know.
But it just made me think of like, it's so hard to have a real conversation, especially about, like, and I think marriages in particular, like I've noticed this trend of like when you're just dating someone and like trying to like feel them out or whatever, like you get your friends' input a lot or family and things. But like when you have a relationship that like is you want it to be long lasting, you want it to work, you want it to be really meaningful. Like, we're not good at talking about that with other people. And so it's much easier to like to try to connect over humor or these kind of like stereotypes that we've put in place. Cause it's just like what you just said, like, is like something really beautiful, but also like really uncomfortable to hear of like, no, he like really loves her. Like, which should be like a wonderful positive thing, but it makes people feel like, ah, like, I don't know what to do with that emotion. Like,
how do I say, what do I say back?
I know.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah. So there was this woman at work, who every time she would see me, every time we would leave the same time, go down the elevator, she would ask about my wife. And it inevitably was like, you know, oh, like, how crazy is she? Has she shown how crazy she is yet? You know, women are crazy.
I have never met this woman, nor well, do I care to.
You saw her once, actually, because you came to work one day to meet up with me outside to hang out for a few minutes.
Oh, I do remember this.
And I was talking to you, I guess kind of close. I mean...
That's right. I do remember
this. She came up. She was coming back from lunch and said, like, who are you talking to? That's not your wife, is it? What are you doing? Right in front of her.
Like, accusing him of like talking like no, like I am the
I was
wife.
Like, well, first of
and
all,
first of all, he
I'm
can have
allowed
a conversation
to talk
with
to
other
another
women.
Woman.
Yeah.
Like, I, mm-hmm. she has no problem with that. I have conversations with you.
Yeah,
so, you all day. You call my wife crazy every day. So anyway, it's so embedded and it's so normal for so many people to like bring up these stereotypes about women being crazy or ball and chain or. And I try to react against it as best I can.
Yeah.
I am also incredibly influenced by people around me because I'm so introverted and don't want to cause a ruckus.
Yeah.
So yeah, I totally hear that.
I definitely get, you know, complacent with that stuff. But yeah.
Yeah. You don't, I mean, you don't, everything in your life can't be like a political battle. You know
what
I mean?
You can't be taking a stand like all the time, every day.
I wish I could, but you can't.
Number one, it would be exhausting.
Oh, it'd be exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think about the first 5 years of marriage? Because I know one of the things that kept happening to us with the advice is the first 5 years is the hardest. It's the hardest. It's the hardest. And like looking back now and only at, you know, we're in the middle of year 10, the first five were harder than the second five, but not like, not substantially harder. But I think that people saying that all the time makes it like you're really tense about every fight you get in. Like, is this it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so our fifth anniversary is in June. So I don't know if this has been the hardest because it's all that we have. I think we did make it, or I made it uniquely challenging for us because when I was in my MFA program, I had to write a thesis with the program that I was in. I had to do a book manuscript. So I had the brilliant idea to do a memoir of our first year of marriage as like a lived experience. And originally it was just supposed to be like, you know, marriage is changing a lot. And I realized that I had done something like countercultural, even though I thought I had done it like in step with the culture. And so maybe it would be interesting to like kind of chronicle how millennials are experiencing marriage. Like the manuscript has since evolved into something completely different, still related to marriage. But I think the act of like writing about that first year and then of course like being in a graduate program and like eventually wanting to publish, you get a lot of feedback that's like not just about your writing, but it's also about your relationship and your personal choices and fights and things like that. Like, I think we set ourselves up for like greater challenges that we wouldn't have had to think so critically about had I not done that. But I really see it as an advantage because I feel like we worked through a lot of stuff that probably wouldn't have come up until like maybe now if we weren't like forced to visit it because of my creative ambitions.
Yeah,
that's accurate.
Yeah. Writing
that's
like things down on paper makes it real. Saying things out loud and actually writing them as opposed to thinking
and
them
sharing
makes
them with
it,
other people.
Yes.
Say, that is like such a personal thing to share with.
A lot of people have read about our first year of marriage.
That's crazy.
And I've read about it a lot too because
there have been drafts of it.
I was a proofreader a lot of the time. So.
Yeah.
Can you please portray me in a different light here, please?
At least you got a little input on that.
It would be like we'd have a fight and I felt like I was like taking talking points right then. He said this and then I said this. And like as it's like happening,
you
I'm
need
like,
a guy
like, stop taking notes.
Yeah, but it was like really trying, it was to like portray, like we were just talking about this earlier, like, looking back at it, there's like lots of moments like I don't feel like either of us is the hero or the villain, or like I tried to create a really like accurate account with like him reviewing the material too, of like not glossing over anything, but there's a lot of moments that neither of us feel proud of, like of what happened.
And I think that's true of any relationship,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you usually just don't record it. So that's
we have a living document. Is,
yeah. At least you guys have your wedding rings tattooed on. I threw mine at Jake at one point in the first 5 years. I was definitely drunk and angry. But yeah, what animals are you guys again?
So I have an owl on my ring finger.
And I have a butterfly. It's an exact replica of a butterfly tattoo Jocelyn has on her foot.
Oh, that's cute.
That nice. I had originally. And so then he got the owl on his foot to match, because we're super magic.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. Have you got the owl tattoo?
Yep. Yeah. I drew it, awesome. Though. I like designed it myself and everything.
Yeah.
It
was really? Fun. I was going to say, are you so super cool. critical of tattoos because of the art history background? Is like every symbol means something?
I am very into meaning and everything, but I'm not a snob about it. I'm not like
you're not smug.
I have a few tattoos that are just like, do I really wish that I had gotten that? I don't know, but yeah. But I, you know,
yeah,
I like tattoos. And yeah, I will want to get more. But yeah.
Yeah, I've tried to never use the word regret with my tattoo. Like, you know, like I'm like, eh,
they're,
you know.
They're like, to me, it's like, this is just a moment in my life that meant something. Mm. And I don't mind remembering that because I learned something from it.
Like, that's who I was at 19 or that's who I was at 19. 23.
Yeah.
So I look at it that way and I find it valuable for that. Yeah. So
next question. Have you read all of the, this is probably going to be cut because whatever, but have you read all the Da Vinci series?
The Da Vinci Codes.
It's not called the Da Vinci series. I don't
it is in my head with Robert Langdon, yes, the Dan Brown. Art history symbologist.
I've read not
that's
all
the
of
official
them.
Title.
I'm a doctor, don't worry.
Symbolism. Symbolism.
I like the symbologistic. Yeah.
Good call, you know.
Yeah, Boondock Saints.
Callback.
So yes, I've read two of them. I read The Da Vinci Code and I've read Angels and Demons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
what is your question?
No,
okay,
that was
no,
it.
Okay, that's
curious.
Fine.
No, I just spin off saying I, like, I ask do. An art historian.
She was hoping he would be like, yes, it was amazing.
No, that's so not true. I just wanted to know, just because I know, like, if I read something, like, and it's about, like, a teacher, like, I'm extra critical of it because I have a different eye, like, when I'm reading it, because it's something I actually know about.
Sure.
Whereas, like, so, like, in reading that series, like, all of them take place in museums. That's
and, like,
just,
were
like,
you reading
thing.
It going, like, that's bogus, that would never happen.
Yeah. So I happened to read them before I started my major in art history, but when I was taking my art history classes, one of my favorite teachers, who's, like, a cartoon character, and I loved him, whenever we would have something that covered something that was in the Da Vinci Code or something by Leonardo da Vinci, he would be critical of the book. He'd be like, no, you got it totally wrong here. Like, that is clearly not Mary sitting next to Jesus.
Yeah.
We all know that John was drawn more effeminate because he was described that way in the Bible and all this other stuff. So yeah, it was just, it was fun to hear him pick those things apart. And I kind of enjoyed hearing that, but, also, people love Da Vinci, but call him Leonardo.
Yeah.
Because Da Vinci is just where he's from.
Ah, like Jesus of Nazareth? We should start calling him Nazareth.
Da Vinci actually means illegitimate child of Vinci.
Ah, like Jon Snow.
It means bastard of Vinci. Yes, like Jon Snow. Exactly.
Excellent. It's what it is.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, I call it Leonardo. I mean, it's popular to call him Da Vinci. It's fine. I do it
Nope, don't. Be smart.
Pro tip.
Pro tip from the art history. That'll cost you.
That costs me so much in student loans, that knowledge.
He's going to make it back one fee at a time.
Oh, man. So overall impact on millennials. How have we changed, do we think, versus like generations before us in terms of like everybody following the same expectations?
So I think that millennials have changed a lot, like what even the definition of marriage is and who gets to get married and is marriage relevant and like what other types of relationships are valid. Like that's just so much more of a conversation and less of an expectation that people like do get married to, I mean, this is going to sound like really old, but like to live together, to have children, or just like all different types of relationships are welcome. And I don't think that necessarily marriage is like an end goal. Like a lot of millennials do still get married. But I think those marriages look a lot different and like what marriage means a lot different to our generation.
Yeah, it's like marriage used to be like the end point to being a grown up, or like, I guess, the starting point of being a grown up. And now it's like you don't necessarily have to be a grown up to get married, which is nice.
It's a piece of it now, I think. Instead of like the start of your adulthood, I think it can just be like a piece of your adulthood.
If you want it to be, but it's not a requirement.
It doesn't have to define you the way it used to.
Yeah.
I wonder what leaps... Like, so we feel like that's like the leap from our parents' generation. I wonder like what they had from their parents' generation. Hmm. You know, like what leap did I guess most of our parents are baby boomers. Yeah, baby boomers and like the older Gen X. Like what steps did they take? I don't know. Was it crazy? Like, hey, we waited till after we were teenagers to get married.
Like, well, I think our parents probably felt like they had a lot more egalitarian marriages or relationships, or at least for the opportunity for that, or like starting of that, like with women's movement and all of that. So,
but I think that's only even evolved more with us.
Yeah.
With the generations since our parents, it's clearly become more egalitarian, I think. And we just have as a culture too. We're nowhere near where we should be, but we're, you know, getting there. But
yeah. And I think that, it, at least from what I've seen, that there's a lot of boomers are dealing with it relatively well. I know Jake and I are both one of four siblings, and we were the first ones to get married. And we got a lot of flack for like when he would spend the night in my college dorm room or from both of our parents, or we would get a lot of flack when we got an apartment 1 month before we got married and started moving our stuff in. And now like, all of our siblings live with their boyfriends and girlfriends, and like they have long term and they get no flack for it. And I think there's just like a slow comfort that's building with it's like okay, maybe it does make sense to live with somebody for a little while and get to know them and, you know, how they like to brush their teeth in the morning. Yeah. Like,
You're welcome, siblings.
Seriously.
Sure. For just practical purposes, because we rented an apartment and I lived in it for a week before we got married, and she stayed at her mom's house that whole week, and it would have been so much easier if she could have just stayed in the
apartment. I think it's so funny that because the whole thing is like it's because they're gonna have sex, but like honestly it's like because it like it's more cost effective or just logistically or practical, like sure maybe, but that's not like people are gonna have sex, they're just gonna do it, and it's not this big like dangerous like thing.
Yeah. I know, maybe it's good to spend a little time living with somebody before you make a commitment to spend the whole rest of your life together.
Get to know them. Well, one of our daughters was like, there's a boy in her class that she likes, and she was like, I'm going to marry so-and-so. I'm not going to say his name because he's underage and I feel like that's breaking the law. And
or just weird in general.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and I was like, well, do you know who he voted for in the school election last year? What religion is he? Do you know what he wants to be for a living? And she was like, and I was like, no, well, maybe you should know those things if you want to marry him. And she was like, oh, okay, Mom. Meanwhile, she was seven at the time. Well, I just think it's becoming more acceptable. And that millennials are really diversifying, like what, like you said, what defines a relationship, because there's so many more things that count as a valid adult relationship now that didn't in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like, as we talked about, like, getting flack from our parents for certain things, but as I like to do on these podcasts, I'd like to give some credit.
So I always cut down our parents, and then he says something nice.
No, I don't think you're cutting them down at all, but I do, not just to our parents, but like the generation that raised us has allowed us the freedom to do this and to be who we want to be. And, you know, even though they give us some flack for it, they still raised us to be the people that we are in the generation that is now breaking a lot of these barriers. So, you know, kudos to them for that, and kudos to us for taking advantage, and you know, and just I'm excited to see where it goes from here, you know, what the next generations do, and what kind of freedoms they're able to have, and hopefully things continue to get better and better, I would hope.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I want a robot to do my dishes so we can break down gender roles even more.
Have you seen the new robot that does that?
It's not a dishwasher. It's a robot.
Yeah,
it
like
is a
so
robot.
We went.
This, no,
pause.
No. This is not what I'm talking about, because this is a video I saw online.
Go for it, babe.
This
take
is
the
straight
mic.
Up like if your kitchen, like if your oven, you know, and countertops had like glass in front of them, and there is a straight up like Jetsons robot arms that come
Rosie?
Down and cook all your food. Like you would see in a cartoon, like it literally has like hands and the arms come down and they cook all the food. You just tell it what to do and then it cleans up everything. It's unbelievable. The future is here, guys. I've seen it. It's coming.
We took our girls to the DC STEM Festival and they Nissan like had a thing and they showed us their robot. Osimo is legitimately his name.
It was Honda.
Awesome. Oh, Honda. Sorry, not Nissan. Forgive me. But
they're never going to sponsor us if we don't get
that. Sponsorship.
Cut out Nissan. Cut out Nissan. And it like walks up and down steps and like kicks a soccer ball and can like talk to you. I am so ready to have C-3PO in my house, like folding laundry. I'm ready.
It's coming.
Well, if you see the things that those Boston Dynamics company, that Boston Dynamics company is doing with robots, it's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Just gonna throw that there.
Yeah.
YouTube that stuff and you'll be like, woo.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to get to, I don't want to get to like the iRobot days where they're like taking over.
Robots are awesome.
Yeah. Let's stop before we get to that point.
Let's not make a theme park of dinosaurs also.
Fair.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
We all saw how that played out.
even if it were possible, though, I don't think they could survive in our oxygen as it currently is on the Earth.
Look at you, science.
It's way back.
Yeah.
Humans could not have lived when dinosaurs lived based on the oxygen that was levels that were then, and they couldn't live here now.
Yeah.
Only one way to find out. Bring them back.
Other concerning moments from movies is the Jaws 3 with the tunnel under the sharks. People do that now in aquariums. You know, in Jaws 3, there's like a tunnel and then Jaws like breaks through.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
Aquariums are doing that like it's okay and it's not.
Speaking of Jaws, has anyone else seen Sharknado? The
Sharknado.
I have not.
Which is amazing.
I've seen all of the previews for it.
This is completely unrelated to anything, but it like changed my life because there's like Sharknado and then there's like Sharknado 2, the second one. But then Sharknado 3 is called Sharknado 3. Oh, hell no. And Mark Cuban is the president. And
oh my gosh.
And what's her? Oh man.
Tara
Reid's in it, right?
Well, this
gets her, like arm, spoiler alert, gets her arm like ripped off and stuff.
That's
like,
great.
Yeah.
Hey, she's been in all three though, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Like this like revitalized
this, like,
her career.
This, like, franchise like built on Tara Reid. Yes.
Sharknado.
I could have sworn she was dead.
Whoa. Nope, just her arm ripped off
just
in Sharknado.
Just in B movies.
Yeah. Okay.
What's the difference?
Is it Brittany Murphy?
Yes, she is dead.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So closing statements.
And other people have died as well.
Nope. No one else. How do you feel about, you know, having expectations, so really anything that we've talked about in the conversation or things that you would want to pass on to other people who are like constantly like dealing with these outside sources?
I would just say, like, know yourself, know your relationship, trust yourself, communicate with your partner. And if like you two are good, no one else matters. Like, obviously you have people in your life who are your friends and family that are like are real with you. And if like, if they have like real concerns about your relationship, you know, I'm not going to say like other people's input is completely invaluable, but like most of the time, even if you're doing something a little bit differently than what other people would expect or have done in your own relationships, as long as like you two are cool, like,
yeah,
you're probably cool.
Have empathy. That's the thing I always come back to, is just like understand that this is another human being with other experiences and different paths than you. And they are probably acting in a way that they believe at least serves them best for who they are. And
right now, to like who they are, like right now.
Yeah. Exactly. Just because you are older than them does not mean you know what's best for them in this moment. You do not have their life experiences. And I think I will always believe that I am wiser than the person I was 5 years ago. But I also don't think that even if I had the information I do now 5 years ago, I would necessarily make different choices because it's all circumstantial. And I can't live that way. And so I try not to judge myself or others too much when it comes to those things.
That is excellent. And up until you said the statement about being older, what you said could have gone perfectly for both sides of the equation, you know, to just have empathy, understand, because I wasn't even sure which way you're going with it, because it really works so well on both sides.
Sure. Yeah. And I liked how you said you're always going to feel like you're smarter than the person you were 5 years ago. But then tying it to what you said about not living someone else's life experience, you might be smarter than yourself, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're smarter than them, you know, than that other person, just because they have a totally different set of standards that they're living on.
So thank you guys so much for being here today.
Yeah, you're our first couple.
Yeah, being our first
couple
first,
on the podcast.
First four-person podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, we loved it. Yeah,
good.
Absolutely great. Well, that's it.
Let's go eat some more.
If you're interested in joining us as a guest host, you can visit the Contact Us page on our website and send us an audio clip audition. As always, you don't need anything special. You can just record it on your phone and send it in. But do us a favor and keep it under 2 minutes so we can listen to them all.
And don't forget to jump onto our Facebook page to suggest a topic. This is super important to keep our conversation going and so that we record things you want to hear.
So you can find us on Facebook at R2S Podcast, on Twitter at R2S_podcast, and on Instagram at Return to Sender Podcast. And links to each of these are available on our website, returntosenderpodcast.com.
And of course, we'd always love to hear from you via our email at r2spodcast@gmail.com. Remember, all of our twos are like the number two, not like the word. Also, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review.
And finally, please remember to help us out on Patreon. That $1 a month really does help us out a tremendous amount.
So until next time, I'm Allie.
And I'm Jake.
And you've been listening to Return to Sender.
I'm Caroline.
And I'm Eliza.
And you're listening to Return to Sender.
We did it!